So now we're going to shift to the other service that needs, back to the other service that needs to be integrated. It's easier to do stuff that's hard when you got people to back you. Hepatitis C, peer education and support in an opioid treatment program. We're going to hear from Dr. Roos, who is the medical director of the Melrose Wellness Center of the Division of Substance Abuse at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx. He's a co-medical director of the division's hepatitis C program, currently funded by the New York State Department of Health. His clinical research and teaching expertise is focused on providing integrated medical and addiction treatment to urban underserved communities using innovative models of care. So it's all yours.
Okay, good morning. Thank you. It's easier to do stuff that's hard when you've got people to back you up. Something that we all know is true, this piece of wisdom was shared by one of our peers as she had just gone through hepatitis C treatment. I'm excited to talk to you today about our hepatitis C peer support and education program embedded within our opioid treatment programs with the support of much of my team right here, Dr. Litwin and the rest of our team from Einstein. I don't have any financial relationships to disclose. So why hepatitis C? Well, hepatitis C is the most common bloodborne infection in the United States, with estimates of 3 to 4 million people infected, resulting in about 3 million or more chronically infected. The incidence has decreased over years, but it has leveled off to a rate that the CDC still estimates as about 18,000 new infections per year. And as people live longer with chronic infections, we're seeing an increase in the prevalence of the complications, including cirrhosis, decompensated cirrhosis, and hepatocellular carcinoma. And so mortality from these conditions is projected to continue increasing and peak within the next 10 years. This affects our patients in the opioid treatment programs, or otherwise known as methadone maintenance programs, although we can use methadone or buprenorphine for treatment, most. As hepatitis C is the most common comorbid disease for patients receiving methadone maintenance treatment, more common than depression, more common than asthma, more common than diabetes. The most commonly identified risk factor for chronic hepatitis C in this country is still injection drug use. And in our setting, in a large opioid treatment program in the Bronx, where we treat about 4,000 patients across three different sites, we have rates of about two-thirds of our patients infected with hepatitis C, of which about 50% are chronically infected. And despite city, state, and federal guidelines supporting the treatment of patients with hepatitis C that have either current or former drug use, and despite successful treatment approaches being documented both at Einstein and other places with co-located care, very few patients with chronic hepatitis C have been treated or are currently being treated. And that is really the only way that we can stem the tide of increasing complications and mortality related to this illness. So why is that? Many barriers have been cited on the provider perspective, including a mistrust of and a reluctance to treat drug-using patients, low hepatitis C-related knowledge or interest among primary care physicians, and many perceived barriers, including poor adherence to treatment or low tolerability to treatment, particularly with patients with many comorbid conditions. For example, if somebody's already depressed, how will they do when they take interferon? If somebody's already anemic, how will they do if they take ribavirin and telaprevir or boceprevir? And a perceived higher risk of reinfection. I say perceived risk because many of these things, because it's been shown that it can be, you can very successfully treat patients with drug use, current or former drug use, for hepatitis C without seeing these related sequelae. However, and so many of these concerns are not as real as providers often perceive them to be. Nevertheless, barriers also exist on the patient side, and those barriers are quite bidirectional, in which some of the same barriers that affect providers also affect patients, and sometimes they can create a heightened sense of those barriers, including mistrust of the providers in the healthcare system, as our patients are often mistreated. And we heard earlier about perceptions of discrimination and stigma related to either race and ethnicity or drug use. Our patients are often mistreated and have a very real sense of mistreatment when they encounter the healthcare system. Low levels of education about hepatitis C and a belief that they may or may not need treatment. We know that there's a pipeline of information amongst patients in methadone maintenance that can sometimes have positive effects and encourage people to enter recovery, and can sometimes have negative effects and create myths and negative thoughts about certain conditions or treatment, whether it's for their addiction or something else. Many patients hold significant fears, not unfounded, about side effects, as they're not an insignificant thing. In addition, many of our patients have competing priorities, including addressing poverty, homelessness, incarceration, and the fragmentation of medical care, which we know still exists in many settings. And patients that are receiving treatment, particularly the opioid treatment setting, have a diagnosis of opioid addiction, now receiving medication to assist their treatment, are some of the most stigmatized and marginalized patients, I think, that we have in healthcare, and often suffer from very low levels of social support. All of things that can present barriers to receiving hepatitis C treatment. But all is not lost. There is a model that we think can help address both some of these patient and provider barriers, is to incorporate the element of peer support into a co-located integrated treatment program. There's been evidence in the literature for patients with psychiatric and substance abuse disorders that peers can increase knowledge of one's illness. They can increase a patient's self-efficacy and entrust in the physicians and medications to assist their treatment, and reduce negative treatment expectations. In addition, peers can be effective in enhancing social networks and providing social support and improving quality of life, which we know may be just as important as geographical location and physical networks that exist in people's life. So we think peers can be effective communicators, they can be role models and provide reassurance, and they can mediate that provider-patient relationship to engender trust, ultimately to motivate and support patients to initiate treatment. And one study was done that showed that patients were more likely to initiate hepatitis C treatment if they had contact with a peer who had successfully completed. So at Einstein, in the Division of Substance Abuse, we have a model in which we have integrated addiction treatment with medical care and mental health care. Patients can receive medical care on-site, including primary care and hepatitis and HIV evaluations and treatment, receive psychiatry and mental health evaluations on-site, and in the setting of the methadone maintenance program, and so receiving pharmacologic treatment for their addiction, whether it's opiate addiction with methadone or buprenorphine, or it's pharmacologic treatment for other forms of addiction like nicotine or alcohol dependence, with substance abuse counseling and referrals for higher level of care if needed. Embedded with all of this, really the key reason why this can be so well integrated is that it's the same providers providing all these services. So it's physicians and physician assistants and medical assistants and nurses who are comfortable doing both medical care and addiction care in that setting. And so on that, helping provide some of those wraparound supportive services are peers that interface both with medical care and the drug treatment providers and other ancillary services like nutrition services, adherence support, retention support, and case management. I'm going to talk specifically today about our current peer educator program, in which we've based our goals on the evidence that exists for peer programs and the theories, both social impact theory, in which you need credible messengers, and social learning theory, in which once you adopt yourself as a role model and you begin performing behaviors and receive positive reinforcement, it can increase self-efficacy. And so the goals of our peer program are to provide a more effective model to educate patients about hepatitis C, more effective than the standard traditional model of having only medical providers provide information, in a model in which we co-facilitate support and education, and in groups, and also find direct education along with informal discussions. Another goal is to enhance our hepatitis C evaluation and treatment in our setting, in which peers are utilized to provide escorts to biopsies or specialty appointments, which can often provide barriers to a complete evaluation for hepatitis before treatment, and to provide positive reinforcement and role model that patients can go through this treatment successfully. In addition, for the peers themselves, to provide an opportunity for patients who are transitioning into new roles and to engage with healthcare systems in our clinic in positive ways, to provide skill-based training for these peers and some community building and a cultural shift within the clinics, and that our patients are useful, skilled, and part of our team in which we deliver and then they receive care. Our current program over the last 2 years is the latest iteration of a long development of peer work that's happened at Einstein in the Division of Substance Abuse. Since 2002, Einstein has had patient support groups in which patients have come together to discuss their concerns and motivate each other and reassure each other. Some of that happened in pizza parlors around the corner in the Bronx. Some of it happened in the clinic. Nevertheless, as the peer groups became more substantial and integrated into the clinic, more training was developed and procedures were more formalized. So speaking now specifically about the peer program for the last 2 years, in which we've used a similar training method and more formalized approach. We've trained 17, so all of our peer educators have been treated or are currently receiving treatment for hepatitis C, which we think is of particular value. They must have attended at least one hepatitis C support group in the clinic, and then they decided that they were interested, completed an application, and attended an orientation for what that peer program was going to entail. So we've trained 17 hepatitis C-specific peer educators over the last 2 years, in which the ages ranged in a very typical way from our patient population in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, with majority men, Hispanic, and genotype number one, which again fits the demographics of our clinic population receiving methadone maintenance in the Bronx. 15 of the 17 had already been previously treated with various outcomes, which many had a sustained virologic response. Some are still awaiting that. And two were still continuing on treatment at the time of their peer educator training. Some of the patients were previously diagnosed with cirrhosis prior to treatment, and some were co-infected with HIV. The outcome from the hepatitis C treatment not being so important, but the experience of having successfully completed whatever that outcome being, we think a valuable, important part of selecting peer educators. Our training is structured and is focused primarily on skills. So 4 2-hour sessions to train our peers, conducted by both medical providers and our program coordinators and health educators, to introduce first the peer and support program and what the expectations of being a peer would be. The peer educator agreement is established in a collaborative way during that session, and so that the peers and the staff both have input into what those goals and expectations are. Second session focuses primarily on hepatitis C knowledge, using some of interactive modalities, including the videos that have been made here on the West Coast from the Oasis Clinic that provide good hepatitis C information in a very understandable way for our patients. Third session teaches peers how to conduct effective outreach, speak publicly to other people about their conditions and themselves, and tell a story about their experience with hepatitis C, as well as review the important matters of confidentiality, both in a regular sort of healthcare setting, but also in a setting in which there are special protections for patients who are receiving mental health and substance abuse treatment. And then being able to perform outreach, but under supervision, to make sure that the activities are going to be effective. We measure knowledge of hepatitis C both before and after our peer training, and all the peers' knowledge increases. But what we also found that is notable is that the levels of knowledge were high, both pre and post training. And I think that comes from selecting peers that have already been through hepatitis C treatment and have a level of sophistication about their illness and the medications that ends up serving them well in their new role. We also support ongoing education at conferences, either through the New York State Department of Health or NDRI, as we feel like that's essential as the landscape of hepatitis C evaluation and treatment is constantly changing. So what are the roles? What do our peers do? So you can see some examples of what our peers do in these images here. One of the most important things that our peers do is recruit new patients to engage in hepatitis C evaluations on site through outreach. It often happens in informal conversations, like in shown in the top picture, where a patient or a hepatitis C peer engages someone else about their health. We know that in the methadone maintenance treatment program, patients are often coming every day or many times a week to receive treatment. And having a set or a network of peers that can engage people in very positive messages about their health has been effective to engage. These peers can also go to external agencies, whether it's a harm reduction agency or other places, to try to engage patients and bring them into hepatitis C evaluation. Our peers also co-facilitate hepatitis C support and education groups. We have support and education groups every other week at all three of our sites, using a curriculum that attempts to bring people along the spectrum from antibody testing to viral load testing to evaluation to treatment, that encourages patients to go through those evaluations with their provider. They also co-facilitate hepatitis C group treatment. We use a group treatment model for our patients that are interested, which can be explored more specifically and also in a poster later this afternoon. But we use a model where patients are treated concurrently, where that group is oriented around that directly administered pegylated interferon injection each week. And so patients get together and there's an educational session and individuals are pulled out in a semi-private visit with their provider to have their medical visit, but yet get support from each other and other patients that are going through the same thing. Our hepatitis C peers also escort patients off-site to biopsies and other appointments. Develop and implement peer-led educational programs to raise awareness and to advocate for hepatitis C treatment, either on-site or off-site. As an example of our peers attending a legislative advocacy day in Albany earlier this year. And so what's the impact of these roles and of these jobs that our peers do on our clinic and on our program? Well, in the last 2 years alone, we've had more than 20 patients escorted to biopsies, which has been a key step in providing an integral part of the evaluation for some of our patients who may or may be close to having cirrhosis. More than 120 groups have been co-facilitated with more than 150 attendees, and the unquantifiable work of that informal work and those discussions in the clinic. That has helped facilitate us at Einstein treat 65 patients in the last 2 years, 41 with directly acting antivirals since August of 2011. So what's the impact for the peer? Well, in 1999, a Puerto Rican woman with more than a 30-year history of heroin use entered methadone maintenance. She reported being diagnosed with hepatitis C in the 1980s, but delayed seeking evaluation for many years because she was feeling scared about the treatment. She heard about hepatitis C support groups and decided to check them out to learn something. She began attending week after week with the support of the group, eventually started looking towards treatment, and in 2009, she initiated treatment in a group setting. She completed 48 weeks of treatment with a sustained virologic response and talks about how the group was helpful because of the peers and having them share their experiences, how they felt, and even after the treatment ended, they all continued to meet weekly. Although she initially held a fear of public speaking, she was so motivated that she wanted to become a peer educator to help motivate others, and indeed many others have been motivated by her example of overcoming personal and health fears to come to groups, because as she puts it, without your liver, you can't live. So what have we learned about doing peer programs in the opioid treatment setting over the last 10 years, and how and why peers work? Well, I think first and foremost, collaboration is essential. All the activities that have come out of our peer program started with patient feedback. Initially, the support groups was a patient idea. The development of our peer educator agreement happens in that first session, so it's developed collaboratively. And we found that more actively involving peers and patients into the decision-making process encourages much more engagement. Co-facilitation, we think, enhances our impact of our group model, both for education but also for inspiring patients to continue treatment. And these patients can role model to others, reduce stigma, and we think create trust within the provider and patient relationship. It's key, however, to provide ongoing training and supervision, weekly supervision meetings with peers, individual feedback about how they're performing. Close monitoring and guidance helps support the strengths of peers and address any potential weaknesses, and target activities to the strengths of individuals. And we know that there are significant challenges to also working with peers, challenges that we think can be overcome, such as ensuring confidentiality. All of our peers are patients of our clinic, and so we have to recognize that. We do additional training for peers around confidentiality and have all of our patients and our peers sign agreements to protect the information of others. Establishing clear boundaries, as I mentioned, the peers are also patients, and so first and foremost, their health is a priority. We're working with individuals who have serious medical problems, including addiction, HIV, hepatitis, depression, and at no point should peer work supersede or jeopardize or put anyone's health at risk, and it's important that that's clear from the outset. And it can also be helpful if non-medical providers, or at least they're not their primary provider, can be the person to provide that primary supervision. And as we think about peers doing work, we want to think about next steps in providing opportunities to transition to other roles. And as we look to a system of integrated care, as we talked about a lot this weekend, one in which peer services and navigations are going to be ubiquitous, as was stated yesterday in a policy session, we think integrating peer support holds much promise to address the barriers both provider and patient that they hold to treat hepatitis C amongst current and former drug users. We also understand that becoming a peer educator can be transformative in experience for the individual. And so as we look to incorporate peer programs, we want to look at hepatitis C peers, we look at diabetes peers or HIV peers. Disease-specific peers as part of our workforce may be very beneficial to us all. And so we think about assessing the impact on knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors of patients receiving these services, expanding it to other conditions, And then now, as we are developing new models of workforce for patients in addiction treatment, including recovery coaches, think about these peers becoming coaches, a service that can be reimbursed, in which there's a higher level of engagement and service being provided. Thinking about integrated care, and maybe a little bit hard to see, if you think about your organization or your clinic or your setting in that box in the middle, in which you're treating patients that are interfacing with a number of other centers, including mental health centers, medical centers, the correctional health services, and thinking about coaches, people from the community who have an expertise in navigating these systems of care that providers and staff often don't have, working with peers as sort of the lattice work for a new model of integrated care in which our community is also part of the delivery system, is an exciting and promising way to think about the healthcare system. Don't have time to show you a brief video, but we are working on some video documentary of our program, and that may be something that can be shown in the future. But I just want to thank all of the team at Einstein, including Dr. Litwin and Irene Soloway and Lauren Cochran-Colas and Shayla Reynoso, our health educator, as well as our Division of Substance Use Leadership, including Dr. Church and Valerie Bartlett, and the New York State Department of Health Aids Institute, which much of this work is funded by, and most importantly, our peers, the Hepatitis C Lifesavers, as they've called themselves. And so thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we got a good feel for co-occurring conditions. And with that, we have about 10 minutes left for questions for any of the speakers. No questions? Yes? Can you speak up, please?
So in our clinics, so there are other places that have utilized peers in the treatment of hepatitis C. In our clinics, this is we have a couple of different peer programs. We have a hepatitis C peer program. We also have a peer program that is oriented around women's health care delivery within the opioid treatment setting, and so sexually transmitted infection risk reduction, HIV prevention. And there is a very large, not directly run by Einstein, but a very large peer recovery support program called the Mars Project, which is separate from Einstein but housed sort of adjacent to it, in which that is sort of peer-structured and peer-run and completely peer-dictated recovery support program. Sure. Well, I think certainly it contains elements of other peer programs that have existed in other settings, either for psychiatric disorders or HIV. This is specifically what we think is one of the first descriptions of a more formalized peer program, specifically for hepatitis C in this setting. Absolutely. So, you know, there hasn't been a peer program in quite this way in this setting before.
Any other questions? Yes?
I was wondering, if you can talk a little bit about the challenges with working with peers, both in terms of getting people paid, that's an issue for you guys.
Paid, yeah.
And then the other one is, and you mentioned how to deal with, say, not to be trying to get peers from people who are supposed to make it not.
So, the second question, I'll answer the second point first, which is that, so some patients did have to get discontinued treatment. I don't think that is a negative in terms of them being able to inspire and motivate others to initiate or continue treatment. That hasn't been our experience. Well, the patients have had to discontinue treatment. It was primarily for complicated medical conditions in which treatment needed to be discontinued for their health or safety, not because of, for example, a lack of interest or something along those lines, or like some change in motivation along the lines. So I think it doesn't really matter the outcome of the actual treatment in terms of their ability to become a very successful peer. from the first point, we do use incentives for our peers to deliver services. So we have worked into our budget that is grant-funded to provide incentives for activities that peers engage in. So it's not a standing stipend, for example, for peers, but each week when there's a peer meeting, they come up with a schedule of the upcoming activities, which would include co-facilitating groups with providers, would include possibly escorting or outreach activities in other places. And each of those is reimbursed with incentives that vary from transportation to $25 gift cards, for example, to reimburse them for their time and effort.
Any other questions? Well, if not, I want to thank, on behalf of the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drugs section, thank each of our speakers, and hope that all of you, especially for those who came in late, there's some materials on the table, and please join us at our reception tonight, 6:30 to 8 o'clock in the room next door in Golden Gate C2. Thank you.